Calendar is Jesse Fuller versus Fisherman's Finest. And again, I invite people to come in and have a seat. I think we can find seats for everybody. All right, we'll hear from the appellant.
Good morning. I'm John Merriam for Jesse Fuller. My left arm shakes at odd times due to an old motorcycle accident. It's not because I'm nervous. Well, I'm nervous, too. That's why my arm is shaking. Anyway.
Well, we welcome you to our court. How much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
4 minutes, Your Honor.
All right, so that's 6 minutes now.
Your Honor, this is a seaman's claim for wages. It's been called the sacred lien. In this case, we have a deckhand who was cheated out of $5,000 in wages. He had to hire a lawyer to get paid, and as a reward, he's now and likely bankrupt, and there's a judgment of $16,000 or $17,000 against him and me, and the fishing company wants $70,000 more plus attorney fees for this appeal, and that can't be the outcome of a seaman's wage claim, and that's why I'm here. And I'm not going to go behind the arbitrator's award. I can't, even though I have some real issues with the way he ruled. Is my position that JAMS in general is biased toward employers because that's who pays them. However, I'm not going to go behind the arbitration award here, only that the claims I made were not frivolous, as the trial judge found. 2 hours of attorney fees at $125 an hour for what Jesse Fuller had to get a lawyer to get paid, it's not compensation. He was not made whole. He did not get his full wages ever because he had to get a lawyer to get those wages and had to hire a lawyer on a contingent fee, which is customary. I don't know how much more I can add. If the panel has read the briefs, perhaps I should take questions.
Well, When you filed the first complaint,
correct,
you were not aware at that time, as I understand it from the record, that Fisherman's Finest had paid your client.
That's correct.
Then you filed the amended complaint.
Yes.
And so the argument is that after you learned that your client had been paid, you didn't have a factual or legal basis to file the amended complaint. What's your response to that argument?
I did for several reasons, Your Honor. Number one, the recitation of nonpayment is a necessary predicate to trigger the entitlement to wage penalties, a higher rate of wages, attorney fees, possible punitive damages, and other things. I did not claim.
Now the higher rate of wages is because you continued to assert on behalf of your client that the oral agreement was void under the federal statute.
Correct. Basically, the whole basis of this case is he was never paid his full wages because to get those wages he had to hire me and he was subject to a contingent fee. So never to this day has he been paid his full wages.
So the respondent in their brief makes a point about how when Mr. Fuller testified at deposition that he said, I'm only here for Mr. Merriam's fees or words to that effect. How does that affect this case, if any?
If you read the whole deposition, Your Honor, he was there for more than that. Yes, he wanted my fees to be made whole, so to speak, to get his full wages. He had to pay me to get his full wages. He did not state in his deposition that he didn't want to have this lawsuit, that he was waiving this lawsuit.
It doesn't sound like there was a lot of real communication between you and Mr. Fuller for a variety of reasons. I mean, he may be fishing, whatever. I mean, did you discuss with him? I guess it's not really even in the record whether he contacted you once he was paid.
Say that again, Your Honor. He contacted me.
Did he contact you and tell you that the company had paid him?
He did not. Okay. He testified in his deposition. He assumed that he had gotten his and I had gotten mine. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. That's what he testified to. If there's no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay. You would then have 8 minutes for rebuttal. Good morning.
Good morning. Bill Walsh on behalf of the respondent and cross-appellant, Fisherman's Finest. I'm glad to hear that we're focusing on the key issue because I think we provided the court more briefing on a lot of issues that are not really before the court today, and we're not relitigating a binding arbitration award. We are focusing on the circumstances under which the original complaint and the amended complaint were filed.
Well, it's my understanding the appeal is from the trial court's entry of the findings of fact and conclusions of law that supported the order imposing CR 11 sanctions and sanctions under 4.84.
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't that what is before us. Is that correct?
That is, and of course, the standard that we're talking about with regard to findings of fact is substantial evidence. So would a fair-minded person be persuaded by the evidence that was before Judge Bradshaw in imposing these sanctions? And I think the record is absolutely clear that not only is the evidence, does it exceed that standard, but it's undisputed. There is no dispute, and Mr. Merriam just confirmed it again, that he did not communicate with his client prior to filing the original complaint.
Did the arbitrator make CR 11 findings?
No, Your Honor. The arbitrator expressly excluded that, acknowledging that was not subject to, because the counterclaim was under CR 11, it was not subject to JAM's jurisdiction. So the arbitrator, this is in the record, the arbitrator expressly excluded that from his ruling.
Well, since it's not in the record, we can't obviously be citing to it, but I think we can look at the arbitrator's decision, which is part of the record, and we can see that it's not addressed.
I think no matter how you cut it, the arbitrator did not address the CR 11.
He did not address
it was all
the CR 11.
It's Judge Bradshaw, and only Judge Bradshaw was the one who addressed it. So,
the request or the argument related to whether Mr. Merriman was entitled to fees, attorney's fees, when he filed the complaint on behalf of his client. Are you taking the position there was no factual or legal basis to request attorney's fees?
Certainly not. Yes, I'm taking that position. But
and sure. Then why?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, we have to look at the circumstances here. The payment was made before the litigation was filed. There's no basis in the law for Fisherman's Finest at that point when they voluntarily make the payment to include a full, one-third of that award on top of that. The one-third that Mr. Merriam was entitled to under his agreement was a part of what Mr. Fuller was paid. So that's a dispute between Mr. Fuller and Mr. Merriam.
So you're saying the one-third was part of the 5,800 whatever?
I'm saying that if Mr. Merriam had a contingency fee agreement, the one-third would have been of the amount that was paid. That's their dispute, but yes.
And that was the amount paid? It was about 5,800.
I think with the plane ticket, it probably was up around 6,500. But yes, that's the amount we're talking about.
Are you saying that Mr. Merriam and his client lacked a good faith basis for alleging that he was actually owed more than that?
We do allege that. There was no basis in law. There was no, and Mr. Merriam made these arguments in front of Judge Bradshaw, and they were rejected by him. There was no basis in law to impose on Fisherman's Finest a fee award. His basis for his fee claim is his contingency fee agreement with his client. That's it. There's no basis in the law for him. The contract, none of the merits of this case provided him a basis in law, certainly prior to the filing of the original complaint, for him to say, no, not only do you have to pay my client in full, but you also have to pay, on top of that, the full one-third that I'm due under this. I mean, that's not rational.
I'm talking about under the interpretation of the contract. Aren't we talking about whether the complaint itself, although he may have lost at arbitration, wasn't it a legitimate claim to say, no, the amount that you've calculated for what my client is supposed to be paid is inaccurate? It should have been more.
Your Honor, the extra contractual claims were frivolous. So our position, and I think it's fully supported by the record that was before Judge Bradshaw, is there was nothing beyond the contract claim and which was not taken out of the amended complaint. So We have two bases for this award. We have the original complaint that was filed without communicating with his client. And I think it's clear, as professionals, we have the obligation to communicate with our client. We can't blame Mr. Fuller for not calling him up. We have an obligation, before we file a complaint in court, to call our client and say, okay, I'm about to file a lawsuit on your behalf, and these are the facts that I'm alleging. Can you please confirm that we can allege these things in good faith? That communication didn't happen. That was ignored. And what was also ignored was Fisherman's Finest attempt to inquire into additional information, which was responded to by Mr. Merriam with, I'm not going to play games with you, I'm just going to file a lawsuit. Well, we've provided the court authority that in those circumstances where the person is warned, there's not a basis, you need to provide a basis for this, and they ignore that and file a lawsuit, that's a basis for imposing CR 11 sanctions.
But I mean, you paid his client without communicating with his lawyer. Now, I realize the bar, for some reason, let that go, but why should he have expected to learn from his client that he'd already been paid when he was representing the client?
Your Honor, with all due respect, I'm not sure why the company had an obligation to inform Mr. Merriam. I think it had every right to expect that if Mr. Fuller was fully paid, he would communicate with his lawyer. Number one, he would communicate with his lawyer and say, hey, I got fully paid. Number two, they certainly would expect Mr. Merriam would communicate with Mr. Fuller before filing in the complaint. So I don't know of any basis in law that would require the company in those circumstances, once they've done their independent investigation and voluntarily decided, by the way, the irony of this
maybe the basis of expecting it would be the fact that the people who were handling it on behalf of the company were lawyers.
Your Honor, I think that cases get resolved pre-suit all the time when the parties, they may engage lawyers, but at some point the parties still can communicate with one another pre-suit. And this is just simply...
Lawyers can't, though.
Lawyers can't, right. But there wasn't a lawyer involved in that. The whole bar complaint was over the fact that the president happens to be a member of the Bar Association, and there was a false allegation that he's general counsel for the company. That was false. And that was all litigated in the bar complaint that was filed. And by the way, the bar complaint really goes to the motivations behind the suit. There was a personal aspect to this lawsuit and what drove it, especially with regard to the amended complaint. I realized that Mr. Merriam was frustrated that he had not been informed, and he chose to visit that on the company rather than his client. That is not a reason to file a lawsuit, and it is certainly not a reason to refile the same lawsuit once you've been told that the facts that are in the lawsuit are false, to refile the lawsuit and proceed. So, again, we're talking about a substantial evidence standard. Would fair-minded people look at this evidence and be persuaded that Mr. Merriam frivolously filed the lawsuit? And I should point out, by the way, the judgment here is joint and several. It's not just Mr. Fuller. Judge Bradshaw also is trying to hold Mr. Merriam responsible for what he did here. So there was some comment about this is the unfortunate circumstances of Mr. Fuller, but really Mr. Merriam is the one who really should be taking responsibility for this. And by the terms of the judgment, he is responsible for this. Is there any more I can say? I want to make sure I've answered your question.
I think you've given me your position.
Fair enough. So with the original complaint, there was a willful refusal to investigate. All we're asking, it's not a lot to ask an attorney in these circumstances to call his client and say, okay, I'm filing a lawsuit. He didn't do that. It's not a lot to ask when the opposing party asks, can you provide us more information so we can investigate your claim, to provide that information. That didn't happen. At some point, an attorney crosses the line and is so bent on shooting first and asking questions later that it's the very reason why CR 11 exists. This is a textbook CR 11 case. You cannot file a complaint, and certainly not the amended complaint in these circumstances. And there was nothing that was raised afterward with regard to any extra contractual remedies or anything that changes the analysis. Those extra contractual analysis claims were not in the amended complaint. So even if theoretically there was some additional basis over and above the contract remedies, those weren't alleged. Those only came up later when there was a rationalization being made for why Mr. Merriam proceeded the way that he did. I also briefly wanted to talk a little bit about our cross-appeal, very briefly. There was two reductions, one 60% reduction and then it was halved again. The first one, there was some basis provided. we don't think it's sufficient. But definitely on the second reduction where the judge just said, I'm exercising my broad discretion and reducing it, we think the law required him to provide a more substantial basis for that. So certainly the second basis. And then with regard to our fees on appeal.
Are there any analogous cases for the second reduction that you think we should look at?
We did.
Did the court abuse its discretion?
We did cite some, Your Honor. We cited, and I'm sorry, I'm looking for the citation right
now. Well, I was just wondering if there was a particular case that you thought was analogous.
Your Honor, it's not coming to me now, but I do know that we cited the court to authority that said he was required to provide us a specific basis. He does have broad discretion, but he has to explain the exercise of that discretion.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, I misspoke. You actually have 6 minutes for rebuttal.
I probably won't need that much, Your Honor, but thank you. In response to one question from the bench about who made the payment to Mr. Fuller without my knowledge, Mr. Walsh was initially involved in the case, and I put in the record where he referred me by email to in-house counsel, unquote. I was referred to deal with Dennis Moran, who is, I was told, was acting as counsel, not CEO. Now, I suppose technically the bar was justified in dismissing the complaint because I couldn't show exactly what hat he was wearing, that of CEO or general counsel, but I certainly thought he was general counsel at the time. Basically, the gist of this appeal is the fishing company is asking this panel to rule that a worker, and especially a deckhand, a seaman, who has been cheated on his wages and has to get a lawyer to get paid, is not entitled to what he has to pay that lawyer to get his money. I think that's the gist of this whole case, and that's really all I have to say, unless there are questions.
Well, yeah, I think you do need to address that, because there is, in the contract, there is a provision that says federal law is going to apply. And so under federal law, why would you be entitled to attorney's fees? Why did you think you were entitled to attorney's fees when you filed the original complaint?
Attorney fees are available upon a showing of bad faith, Your Honor. I think there's plenty of bad faith shown in this case. I've cited authority in the brief for that.
So that was your basis?
Correct. There's also a borrowing under federal law. I cited the decision from Judge Zille in Green versus Pacific King, where the federal maritime law is lacking in wage penalties for fishermen, which it still is, there can be a borrowing from state law, and he, in fact, borrowed from state law, Title 49 of the RCW, which is replete with public policy considerations why workers should not have to eat their own fees if they have to hire a lawyer to get paid.
Okay.
That's my position, Your Honor.
Thank you.
On the amount that the company paid your client, I think I just heard opposing counsel say that it was clear cut that that was the right amount on the contract. So what was your legitimate basis for alleging that he was, or did you allege that he was actually owed more than that? And I'm not talking about attorney's fees. I'm just talking about the contractual amount.
The base wages.
Yes.
Your Honor, if you'll read my amended complaint carefully, I did put that in the body of the complaint, that he was not paid. That's a predicate for penalties, attorney fees, and other things. If you read carefully my prayer for relief, I did not ask for the principal wages again. I had to lay the groundwork to have these entitlement to attorney fees, penalties, punitive damages, whatever else he was entitled to.
Okay, so your dispute was not about the base wages. The dispute was about the entitlement to attorney's fees and other ancillary,
that's correct,
remedies.
That's 100% correct.
Okay, thank you.
But the original complaint, you didn't know he'd been paid. So as I read the original complaint, you were taking the position this is not
He had not been paid.
This is void, and so we're entitled to the remedies under the other statute, which means the highest of the wages paid.
Correct.
So that is what you put in there, and then you repeated that in the amended complaint. So as I understood your position at arbitration, you took the same position, which is this was an oral contract. These additional trips were there was a dispute about whether they were agreed to or not, whether they were governed by the contract, but you took the position he was still entitled to the higher wage amount.
But perhaps I misspoke. That is correct. I still took that position because at the time of the employment.
You took that position throughout, as I understand it. The amended complaint, and the arbitration,
right,
the original complaint.
I stand corrected. I took, and I still take that position today, that because
you were relying on federal law to say we're entitled to more money. Even if he got paid X, he's entitled to more money.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I mean, the arbitrator rejected it, but that was your argument.
The arbitrator rejected it, but I still think I'm right. I don't see how this court can find I was acting in bad faith. Unless there's more questions, I think that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The next case this morning is case number 3, Rhodes versus